Hello and welcome to Retrotainment. We're back again here with my co-host, Capital C, Capital O, Greg. How are you doing, buddy?
What's happening, homie?
Not too bad. And we're joined again by the king himself, one half of the On the Slab podcast, which is their horror podcast, recently launched. Episode 5 just went live yesterday. Jaws, one of my all-time favorite horrors, I have to say, although I don't know if it's still considered a horror, because it's more of a Predator film than a horror. Not Predator as in the episode we had Carl on for previously. Not that sort of Predator, different type of Predator, but a Predator nonetheless.
It's an owl creature feature. But, it's one every time we talk about it. I'll always say it's probably the closest to a near-perfect movie.
Yes.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And, okay, the shark looks a bit... But, you know, it was the 80s, or 70s. The 70s. I'm willing to accept the shark looking a bit questionable, you know. This week we have Terminator 1. The anniversary of Terminator 2 is the 30th anniversary as this goes live. So later today we have the other half of the On the Slab duo, the Dynamo Ian Kelly, on for Terminator 2 because that's his preferred one. But Carl, unlike, I would say, most people... prefers Terminator 1. Yeah. Now, I can't fault anyone who prefers Terminator 1, and I can't fault anybody who prefers Terminator 2. Quality flicks, just slightly different. One is more horror sci-fi, and the second one is a more action sci-fi. So I suppose it just depends what you really like, doesn't it?
To me, I really should prefer 1. I think I prefer 2 overall. As a movie, I think it's because I seen it first, because obviously it came out when I was young. I was only one when it came out, but I remember seeing 2 definitely before seeing 1. It's more, I think 2 is definitely the more memorable in terms of scenes. But
it's a big action film.
Yeah.
You know, it's $100 million budget for 2 was crazy,
and it's number 2, so like. Number 1, you have to set the premise. You have to make sure that you're successful. Number 2, you already know it's going to be successful. So now you have that bit more freedom where you're like, okay, we can expand on that. Whereas you're a little conservative when you're making the first one.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always work out. Sometimes when you make a second film, it doesn't work out as being as good as the first. But this one, for me, easily as good as the first. Yeah, definitely.
Now, before we go on, I don't dislike the second one at all.
I don't think anyone dislikes 1 or 2, you know?
No.
The other one's questionable, but I don't think anyone dislikes 1 or 2.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you always have one that, I flip-flop. Like, I could prefer 1. If you asked me yesterday, I'd say, I prefer 1. Ask me today, I prefer 2. It would just flip-flop day to day, week to week sort of thing. Because it depends what mood I'm in.
This film would actually be at home on my own on the slab in terms of how much I love it and how much I could talk about it.
I'm sure we'll see an episode of On the Slab for Terminator at some point.
I'm gonna try and stop doing that a bit more. You stay away from the horror, right? Just stay away from the horror.
We won't be doing too much more horror.
one is definitely a harder watch than 2.
In what sense, Greg?
Like, it's a lot darker. It's a little more serious than 2 is. The atmosphere is just horrible in this movie.
I love it.
It's built brilliantly, suspenseful.
Yeah.
Like, watching it, there's not a whole lot of time to breathe in it.
Yeah, it's one of the few films I find where, a lot of the times I find when there's similar to like a creature feature where something's hunting somebody else, less is more.
Yes.
But this is kind of the opposite because Arnie doesn't really talk. So even when you get more of Arnie as the Terminator, it's just him like walking them down. So it's not even, it's not like he's just off doing anything else. Every bit that you see him, there's a hint of kind of darkness to it.
All 58 words that he says in this movie.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it?
But like, it's not like it's not like you want the short circuit, Johnny Five, wafting all through the film. What he did was perfect.
Yeah,
this film.
Brilliant. It was released over here. We got it on the 17th of May, 1985, which was a little bit later than everywhere else because the States got it on the 26th of October, 1984. So we're six or so months behind. Thankfully, that is not a thing anymore. But yeah, back in the day, that used to always be the way. It'd come out in the States, you'd wait 6 or 7 months, maybe even a year, and then we'd get it.
It was bad, so wasn't it?
What happened, except us, because we didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
Crazy. Ratings-wise, 100% for 65 critics on Rotten Tomatoes. So like, it's perfect.
The first 100%.
The first 100% we've had on here, and it's, you know, deserves it. Audience rating is slightly down on this compared to the second. This one has an 89%, whereas 94. Terminator 2 has a 94% audience, but it doesn't have 100% critic. So where it drops for in one category, it seems to go up in the other. So
I'd highly imagine it's due to maybe the little less action in this than there is in the second one or something like that.
Or possibly the fact that it was the first one and, you know, like, if they, I don't know, you know, the way sometimes film critics have a little bit more inside information and they probably knew there was going to be a second one, like.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. I don't know.
Possibly, you know? Yeah. Box office, it made 78.48 million. So nearly 78 and a half million. Like, that is not, you know, you're talking the late, like, mid-80s. That's not bad, not a bad pull-in, especially... Now, the second one makes an absolute bomb, like makes this look like child's play, but it makes that off the back of how good this one actually was.
Yeah.
But this one only came off a 6 million budget or something as well.
Yeah, pennies, and, yeah.
So it definitely made it. I mean, they would have been over the moon with that kind of profit, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. It opens up in a desolate wasteland, and we're told it's Los Angeles 2029, right? And we're just told that, you know, there's been a massive battle and that the final battle is going to be fought in the past. Like, this very kind of common thing now, but when you think back to the fact that this is the mid-80s, like, that wasn't, like, this is an incredible concept, you know.
Yeah.
We'll go back in time to kill something to stop it from happening. Like, that, I don't know if there was anything had done that before. It's been done since, but I don't know if anything had done that before.
Do you know?
Well, basically, it's like a dark Back to the Future, really.
Yeah. Do you know where he got the idea from this?
No.
So he was filming. He was the head of production for Piranha 2, the Reckoning or something. And he got a really bad infection when he was in Rome. And he woke up after having a nightmare with this idea.
Incredible.
And the script that he wrote for it was originally torn down. And then they rewrote this script, but the script that got torn down was Terminator 2.
No way.
It's mad to see how that happens. You know, like, how many times things that are massively popular that Rambo was Rambo got turned down, or sorry, Rocky got turned down by everyone.
Yeah.
Fuck. I mean, of all films, I love the Rocky series.
Yeah.
Me too.
It's incredible to see, like, certain things get turned down, then they get picked up and they become the biggest thing in the world, sort of thing.
But could you imagine they went off with the original script? So they made Terminator 2 as number one.
Yeah.
And it made that money that it did. Like, what happens then? Where do you go?
Probably
would have had a different Terminator 2, and as in, it wouldn't have been Terminator. The Terminator 1 wouldn't have been Terminator 2.
No, you wouldn't be able to switch them. It's like, one goes into two. Two can't go to one. Like,
God bless James Cameron getting sick.
Thanks, James.
This film opens with we see Arnie come down completely starkers and a kind of electrical field, which is how he's been transported. And we see him in the kind of muscle man pose. And then he walks down these young punks and just tells them, you know, your clothes, give them to me. Which is, you know, just great. Like, no, those clothes aren't going to fit you. Look at the size of those lads. They're tiny little, like, whippets compared to you, mate. You'd need all of their clothes together to get into you. Like.
And of course, as if by magic, they fit them.
They do fit them. I like that they all have the little switchblades and think, you know, they're hard. So they go for it with him and he just batters them around.
He punches, rips your man's heart out.
Your man's heart out. Just
That's Bill Paxton. Solid start.
Solid start to a film. This man's heart's been ripped out within 5 minutes.
Now, there you go. That sets the tone. That sets the tone for the film.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah. And he hasn't said anything else. That's all he said to them is, your clothes, give them to me. And then we see him rip a man's heart out. You know, that the limited words, limited vocabulary, maximum violence.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, we see a second kind of electrical field, and we see another naked guy show up. Obviously, we don't know who this is, but it's Reese, just so that we have the Kyle Reese. Yeah, just so we have a name to put to it. And he steals the hobo's pants.
I love that. It's brilliant, because normally you'd see, so then you've gone, so is the first guy the bad guy, or is the guy robbing the homeless guy the bad guy, and then the cops come?
Yeah, and then he robs the cops because he takes your man's gun. Then he goes in and he robs the shop for everything he can get and leaves with the gun again.
And how raw that is. Like, how thing that he batters and takes the gun, goes in, and you see him like scrambling around the shop.
Mm.
But there's a scene there where he's in between the jackets. He's at like a bargain bin. He picks up the runner and you see him kind of hobbling along, trying to put it to his foot to see if it fits.
Or when he puts the his leg down and he fixes the end of the jeans.
Yeah. real important to make sure those jeans fit him properly, you know.
The torn ups are good, like.
Yeah.
What I like is that he continues, like, the rest of this film, he continues to just wear those hobo's pants.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about yous, but like, hobos don't tend to have somewhere to wash or anything like that. Their clothes tend to smell terrible. You think he'd have, like, you know, I'll go pick up some different clothes or something. No, I'll just keep these hobo's pants. They're fine.
They're probably treated like royalty in the future, like, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, possibly. But
he knows who that guy is.
Yeah, it's his uncle or something. Yeah,
could be. But we see him look up Sarah Connor, which gives us the premise of what's the objective here. And he looks it up in the phone book, something that people wouldn't know about now, but they were thinking back then.
At that stage, Ted. At that stage, you're still not sure who the bad guy is.
Exactly, yeah. He's looked up Sarah Connor and he's just rips it out of the phone book and takes that with him.
And like if you're to watch this now, it looks like there's two bad guys, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Looks like two people hunting her down. Yeah. And they haven't given us any information. All we know is that the final battle is going to be fought in the past. So you're like, right, what's this Sarah Connor got to do with all this? And then we get to see who Sarah Connor is. She's just, they kind of portray her as this innocent, you know, but clumsy.
Goody two shoes,
yeah. Yeah, innocent, clumsy girl who keeps knocking stuff over. She's not particularly adept at like maneuvering through things or anything like that. And, you know,
she. The ice cream in the pocket,
Joe. The ice cream in the pocket for later. I'd
box the head off that little bollocks.
You know, she's just working there. It's just a job to her. Like, oh, grand, I'll just keep working here. Like, oh, who cares if I get treated badly? There's nothing I can do about it. She has no attitude, you know? She's just real. She's a pushover.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just trying to get on with life.
Yeah. But we then see kind of the Terminator go into a gun shop. And I love this.
That scene.
Listen out, I'll have a 12-gauge shotgun. I just listen all these guns out. And then the plasma rifle in your man's like, whatever's on the shelf, dude. Like, I don't have a plasma rifle, whatever that is.
Just and what you see, pal.
Yeah. And then he starts loading the gun. Your man's like, hey, you can't do that. Wrong. Just classic. Again, minimum words, maximum damage.
He's brilliant in everything, though. I can't think of his name now. He was in Gremlins. Frank Kelly, is it?
I think it is. Something like that. Sounds familiar, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. But once he buys those guns, he finds the same list of Sarah Connors and
goes through them.
I think now we discover which one is definitely the bad guy, because he calls up to this house with little kids and all in it, knocks on the door. Sarah Connor, yeah. Bang, 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 bang. Just riddles it.
He also runs over the kid's toy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that kid shouldn't have left his toy out on the road. You know, that was the kid's fault. I don't blame him for that.
It's also true.
Yeah, I don't blame him for that. But, I mean, knock on someone's door and then shoot them dead. Yeah. You're the baddie then when you start doing that. Like,
there was a slight overkill in there as well. It wasn't just one or two shots. Yeah.
Really goes for it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And we see, you know, the police have now discovered that there's two deaths and both called Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
Kind of started putting it together. They're like, oh crap, we've got a serial killer who just hunts people called Sarah Connor.
Yeah. It won't take too long.
where the girl that she's working with pulls her in. She's like, "There's been a murder. It kind of involves you."
Yeah.
In no way, you're, shape, or form does dead, it involve honey. You.
Just the same name, though, you know.
Yeah.
But we see them back at their apartment. I suppose it sort of is, and the boyfriend rings up, and he's like, he's got this real like creepy monologue.
Yeah.
And when she first answers, you're like, "Whoa, that is a creepy monologue." And then you see her kind of laugh, and you're like, "Right." She knows who this is. She knows what's going on. And she calls the roommate, but the roommate's got the earphones on, so she doesn't hear. And he's just keeping going until she's eventually like, "Who is this?" He's like, "Oh, shit.
I'm in trouble."
Yeah. But she puts him on the phone to him, and then she goes looking for her iguana.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a pair.
Just randomly, she has an iguana.
Well, they were quite popular around the 80s.
I suppose, yeah, but, you know, nothing really happens with the iguana. There's one other scene with the iguana when he knocks stuff off a shelf. That's about it.
I think it was to do with the times, though. Like, that's when,
yeah,
like,
probably
the reptiles became huge.
Yeah, probably is, yeah. But she's meant to be going out on a double date with the roommate, her boyfriend, and then somebody who rings her and cancels. So she says, "Oh, I'm just gonna go out." So she goes out and she gets she's in like this ice cream bar judging by the sign outside it when she comes back out. Which, why don't those still exist? I want an ice cream bar.
We do. We definitely have one at the back of Butler and Berry's.
No, but that's just an ice cream place. Like, you can't, it's not a bar. Like, she's sitting in and like they're all having drinks and eating ice cream. I want that. Yeah. but she's in there anyway, and she hears on the TV station they're talking about anyone named Sarah Connor, can you please call the police? And she gets a bit freaked out here, which, you know, fair enough. Your name's Sarah Connor and you're like, okay, two other Sarah Connors have been killed, I'm
in
trying to look after myself here. So she leaves, and we see Reese kind of just outside. And he starts kind of following her. And she's smart enough here that she does realize it. So even though she seemed innocent and, you know, unaware of what's going on, she's not completely unaware, because she does notice him behind her and dips into a tech noir.
Tech noir.
Sounds like a right old spot, that.
Yeah. I like that she goes in, she's like, "Can I use your phone?" And they're like, "Yeah, you just have to pay in."
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
$20 or whatever it was. $10 or
whatever. Yeah.
It's an whatever old hell club or something.
This is this tech dancey club by the looks of it. It's grand, like, you know. It's what it said on the tin, I suppose. Tech noir. What was she expecting, you know? I like that she's on the phone and she rings the police and she just can't get through, because obviously the phone lines are going to be insane with all these people ringing up. And then she rings the roommate and leaves a message of, you know, "I'm really freaked out. You know, there's some guy following me, and, you know, the police have said that I need to get in contact with them." And then she hangs up and she's like, "I'm going to ring the police again." So she rings the police. She's like, there's some guy following me. And they're like, "Where are you?" "Oh, I'm in tech noir." And they're like, "Great, stay there, stay visible, and you'll be safe. Nothing will happen to you in there." Nice reassuring words, I suppose.
Back in the 80s. Oh, sure, why not?
Yeah, but while she's on the phone to the police, her roommate gets the roommate and the boyfriend get paid a visit by a certain Terminator, who we said he does overkill earlier, and he wasn't messing around here either. He doesn't speak here at all either. He just comes in and just murders both of them. And, you know, he's not going to know what Sarah Connor looks like, so may as well kill this one. Now, he does know after this, because he picks up her her bag with her ID in it. And I like that he picks up this little book that has a list of phone numbers and addresses, you know, like a phone book that you used to have when, like, well, your parents definitely would have had. I didn't really have one, you know. Who did I need in a phone book? All my friends lived up the road. I didn't need their name and address, did I? But, you know, they had the name and the address of where people would be. And I like that he picks this up and keeps it, because it does tie in a bit later. That he does use this for his own advantage, but
it's him picking up as they go along. He's learning as he's going.
Yeah.
It's done very well. Like, normally in movies, you see the mistakes they make, they just know. But it's done by design to show he's adapting.
It's something I think James Cameron's very good at. Like, he doesn't leave things like that out, you know? It's not just, he knows where her mother lives, you know?
I think in the 80s especially, they really knew how to do even horror and sci-fi to a T, you know?
What a time.
Absolutely.
It was kind of like they thought more about, you know, right, here's a plot hole. Yeah. How do we get around that? And it's like, okay, we need him to kill her mother. How's he going to find her mother? Right, this is how he'll find her. Oh. Yeah, rather than just going, I just killed her mother. And you're like, well, hang on, how did he find her? Like,
yeah,
he does that with all his movies. Though there's not.
That's what I mean.
Many.
I do like that James Cameron does that. Like, he's very consistent for it.
The likes of The Abyss and all is perfectly worked. Now that is a suspenseful movie.
Yes,
to say
that
at least.
Is close as everything.
But he obviously listens to the recording of the message, and now he knows where she is. So.
It's on now.
Time to hunt again. I like it. Just kind of jumps here now that she sees Reese in the in Technoir.
He's sitting at the bar. Yeah.
He's sitting at the bar, and she kind of. But Terminator's coming in. I like that he comes in, and your one's like, "Hey, he didn't pay." And this big security guard comes over, and he's like, "Hey, you gotta pay." And he just crushes his hand.
I love that. Yeah.
Doesn't even turn back. Just straight down. That guy goes.
Yeah, that's all sorts. That arm is all sorts of fucked up.
I like the way he comes in, though. Like, he comes in and, you know, he's like looking around for her. And then just as he looks to where she is, she happens to knock something on the floor. That's so she bends down to pick it up. So he just doesn't see her. And that gives time for Reese to pip him. And then as he sees her and he's lining up the shot, Reese pulls out this... the shotgun that has just been inside his jacket the whole time. I mean,
a long pocket.
Yeah, nobody questioned this man walking around with a shotgun.
He cuts the handle and the barrel off it.
He does, but at the same time,
he puts it on the pizza string.
Yeah. At the same time, he's walking around with this shotgun with no t-shirt. He just has this jacket on, no t-shirt. No one's questioning him. He's just walking around. Like, yeah, just the trench coat. Like, yeah, okay, that doesn't seem weird. This guy in hobo pants, a trench coat, and a shotgun in his pocket. Like, yeah, no, that's not weird.
And a pair of fresh kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, nothing weird about that guy. But
he's tripping on acid.
He launches a volley of shots into the Terminator here. And eventually shoots him out the window. And we just see the Terminator hit the deck. And you're kind of like, surely this isn't it. Like, but then you still don't really know if Reese is a good guy or not. So you're kind of like, right. Is he a good guy here? Or is he now going to take her? Is it just like he wants to be the one that kills her? Or, you know, who knows? But he tells her, like, you know, you need to come with me if you want to survive. Where that lad is
come with me if you want to live.
Yeah, come with me if you want to live. And we see Terminator just sit up like the Undertaker outside. And that's when she decides, I think I will go with this guy. Because, you know, I just saw this man get shot by, like, a shotgun out through a window. And there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with him.
Yeah, it's brilliant, though. I'd say the Undertaker's sit-up thing came from that.
Possibly.
We then see the chase in the kind of police car.
He just doesn't give up, does he?
No, he just keeps going after them. And eventually they do get rid of him by slamming on the brakes and he crashes into this big wall.
Yeah.
But in doing so, a lot of other police catch them and they're brought to the station. I like this because they bring them into the station and... they bring in a psychologist straight away, Dr. Silverman, who's
he's cool.
What a dick, though. Like, you know, you don't really see it too much in this film, but the next film, man, what a dick. Like, but he starts, you know, he interviews Reese and he's like, this guy's insane. Like, I love this guy. I'm gonna write a book on what this guy's saying.
All he's saying is money.
But he just tells Sarah, you know, this guy's insane, do not listen to what he has to say. And while all this is happening, we see the Terminator go back to this room that he seems to have decided to rent.
He must have a lot of money, like, you know.
Well, I mean, you probably wouldn't say no to him either. Like, can I have that room?
Fuck you, asshole.
Yeah, that's what I like. That's what I was going to say. I love that he's, like, sitting there and he's like, response, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Say nothing. And it's like all these, like, different responses and then just, fuck you, asshole.
I love it.
That's the one he goes with. Your man's just like, yeah, fair enough.
So, yeah, you know the way his face is kind of ripped a bit in the, when he comes through here?
Mm. Yeah.
So there's apparently a thing I was looking at and I was reading that after they filmed this, it was apparently early in the morning and he decided he was going down to Denny's to get breakfast, forgot that he had makeup on. And he walked into Denny's.
He walked
into Denny's in the leather jacket and all, and he's just like, yeah. And then they were like, what the fuck?
Look at this lad, half his eyes missing. What's going on here?
You don't need breakfast, you need a hospital.
I've got one more for you, right? So think about this, right? Arnie was originally not cast as, or not wanted as, the Terminator.
That's right.
OJ Simpson was supposed to be the Imagine. Terminator.
Life imitate, or art imitate. No, life would imitate art then.
I can't imagine anybody but Arnie.
Arnie was meant to be Kyle.
Oh no, no! Oh. Like,
that's who he wanted to be when he saw the script. That's who he wanted to be.
Yeah,
James
Cameron, I think, persuaded him what it was.
I don't think he would have worked as Kyle. He's too big to be the Kyle character, isn't he?
There's not many films where Arnie was the bad guy. Anyway, at this time,
I'd say this is probably one of the few films. And little spoiler for the second film. So if you haven't watched that, well, that's your own fucking problem. It's 30 years old.
Yeah.
They obviously realized, like, we want to keep Arnie on, but I would say Arnie was like, I'm not being the bad guy again. Just flip the script, make me the good guy. It works that time because of how they make the new Terminator in the second film.
Do you know how they got him back?
No.
Money.
They bought him a 12 million quid Gulfstream jet.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah. And 3 million quid cash.
Well, I mean,
he throws a hair bargain, doesn't he?
You're not going to say no to that. Yeah. What I love in this scene, though, is he's fixing the eye, but there's no pain or anything, you know? It's just, just methodical. Like, I just need to fix this. I just need to fix this. Very similar to Predator, when Predator's fixing his stuff, you know? Real, I'll just fix that. Yeah, that's fine. No pain. Now, I don't know about you guys. I don't think it is, because I can't find it anywhere. But do you know when he looks in the mirror and he has, the eye is open and you can see the cybernetic eye? I don't know why, but it just looks so much like he's wearing a Mike Myers mask. But they've put, like, a Mike Myers mask, but, like, tried to meld Arnie's face over it. I can't find any information if that is the case, but it just looks like it to me.
Can't imagine that was the case. I'd say it's probably just an uncanny, you know, likeness.
It could be, yeah. It's probably because of the pale and, like, the way it's pulled open and stuff. But it looks so similar to me.
Go ahead, Cal. There.
I was just gonna say that's something we should look up. And
I looked it up. I couldn't find anything. I can't find anything.
But if you can't find it, then it's not.
Yeah.
It's
not, so I don't know.
It doesn't exist. No, I'd say it's just one of those generic masks they probably picked up somewhere.
Yeah, it probably is. It's just, like, whatever way they did it. It looks so, like, go back and watch it. It looks so similar.
I get you. I get what you're saying, yeah.
It looks so similar, lads.
Wasn't the Mike Myers mask a William Shatner mask turned inside out?
Yeah, it was. So maybe they just had a William Shatner mask. I don't know.
It's ingenious, that is, isn't it? When you think about it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Brilliant.
But he goes from here to the police station. And this is when we get, one of Arnie's signature lines that I think everyone knows. I'm here to see my friend Sarah Connor. Yeah, no, she's doing it. She's been talked to. Like, you can just wait there. And he's like, okay, I'll be back. I just love, he just leaves. And your man's just like, what a fuck. Your man's just like, what a weirdo. And he goes back to doing his work. And then this car just comes driving in. Your man's like, oh shit.
Now, what I love about that is you see him, it's like he's scanning the desk or whatever it is, to see what you can, how much force you'll need to drive through it, or whatever way to get through it.
I'd say that's what it was, to be honest. Yeah. They just don't go into it. Like, they leave that to you to work out, you know?
Yeah, well, the way he's doing it, it's like he's just looking around and he's scanning the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I just thought that. And again, he he played a fucking android perfectly.
Yeah, you'd believe he was a robot, like real straight laced, like.
Yeah.
But he crashes the car in anyway, and then he gets out and just all hell breaks loose here in the police station. Don't They're all like, "We'll take him down." There's 30 police officers here. Yeah, 30 dead police officers by the end. Yeah.
I love this though. You see them all running down. They're all getting riot gear and all. Yeah. go! Yeah. And it just dwindles down.
I don't know if you guys noticed in Arnie's films, and that it's of course I would notice this shit because I'm an Arnie nerd, you know. But you see him in that he shoots someone, then he does another little shoot for good measure, but it's like a sideways shoot.
Yeah, always make sure of it.
He does it in Commando, I think, and he does it in...
He definitely does do it. Commando,
he does
it
in Commando, yeah, definitely.
It's just like a little... It's like almost a little signature shit.
It's called the double tap.
Yeah. Double tap, that's how you make sure he's dead.
I think one of the only people he doesn't do it to in Commando is the first guy. Remember, he's sitting... Hey, peace, man. Shoots him square in the face.
This is one bit where, you know, Dr. Silverman in the second film is like, there is no Terminator. And I'm like, man, you were in that police station. That guy gunned down 30 police officers while they were all shooting at him. And you're telling me you don't believe that there's a thing called a Terminator. I'm sorry. If I saw that, I'd be like, yeah, there's something up with that dude. Like,
wow, but, you're mental.
But recent Sarah managed to escape his slaughter here. He seems to just be enjoying killing the police officers here at this point.
He's not even enjoying it. It's just a job. Like, it's...
Yeah, but it's kind of like, enjoyment is definitely the wrong word, but it's kind of like he makes sure that he kills all of them, you know?
He's fulfilling his duties.
Like, he makes sure that none of them survive to hassle him again, even though they're, you know, they're kind of like a fly buzzing around his head.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I'll kill that so it stops doing it, rather than just, you know, shoo it away. But you see them escape, and in the escape, we learn that Reese has been... shot, so they're under this this dodgy looking bridge, which fits his hobo pants, I suppose. And she gives him a field dressing after she finds out he's been shot, and this is where we start to see that there's more to Reese coming back than just, you know, this was a job. And she starts asking, and he's like, yeah, there's no way for me to get back, and I wanted to come because, you know, I wanted to volunteer. Like, you just like, I wanted to volunteer, and like, we start to see, you know, that it's not just a job to him. Like, there's a reason he came back, and it wasn't just because he was told to.
It was for the job.
Yeah. Well, he does perform a very important job, to be fair, because the series doesn't survive without with Reese, does it?
So you know where they're talking there at the bridge, and it gets real misty.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bug bomb they had to release because the place was infested with flies.
I was going to say, probably.
So that it wasn't supposed to be misty. That's actually fucking pesticide or whatever.
Well, it works out for the best, doesn't it? Exactly, a lot of things in this film seem to have just worked out for the best. Like OJ as Terminator, not a chance.
He would have just had a head on a pike.
Oh, Jesus. But we see, you know, she starts asking about the future, and he's telling her, you know, your son's name is John. And I like the little line she has here, you know, well, at least I don't need to think about his name, you know. But she says to him, she's like, do I look like a leader? Do I look like somebody who helps fight an army? Like, look at me. And this is where she kind of brings up the point that, you know, like, I can't do this. Like, I'm just a normal girl, you know, a bit naive, a bit clumsy, like, what makes you think that I'm going to be able to train up this guy that, you know, leads the revolution in the future? And he's just like, I know you can, because, well, you know, I'm from the future and you did. So I know you can.
What James Cameron's done here is brilliant. Like, you know, the whole time travel rules, you can't change something in the past. So he's come back from the future and changed hers by telling her what she needs to do. So, like, from now till, we'll say till the end of T2, she's changed drastically. Like, her body persona from this one to the next one.
Even her personality changes massively from this to
massively.
The next one.
Yeah. Both, but like, both
it's that precipice that you don't change something in the past, but he's gone back and changed it.
But I think it's
too great. Set up.
Yeah, but I think if he doesn't do that in the past. Like if he'd never actually gone back, then she never has John Connors.
No, yeah, I know, but that's what I mean. Like he's gone back to change her future.
Yeah, like him going back was needed to get to the future that they were in originally, thing. Yeah. But they kind of go from here and hide out in this this motel. And Reese goes off to buy supplies, and she rings her mother.
Not condom, sorry.
No. Well, you know, it was the '80s.
Well, it's not Chris Packets.
It's definitely not like letting Jim Carrey go and get supplies in Me, Myself, and Irene.
No, definitely not like that. No, but she rings her mum, which again, you know, like just shows her kind of naivety here. She rings her mum, and you know, it sounds like she's talking to her mum, and her mum's like, "I need to know where you are, so that you know, like, I just want to know you're safe." And this is where we see the little book come into handy, because it pans back to the house and Arnie's got the book. And he's obviously gone to this house, presumably killed the mother. They don't say it, but like, you know, where else is she? And he's a Terminator, so what else was he going to do?
She's at bingo.
He's mimicking her voice as well. And she tells the Terminator, "This is where I am." And again, the hunt is on here. But she doesn't know that he can do this. Like, this stuff hasn't been explained to her yet. So she's not thinking, you know, this could be anyone other than my mother. She hasn't seen him replicate
someone's voice or anything.
Yeah, so, you know, you can't blame her, but, like, you can kind of blame Reese. Like, you should probably have told her, like, you know,
everything that the TA-100 does.
Yeah, like, don't worry about telling her about her son. Like, tell her about this guy that's hunting her and all the abilities that he has. Like...
But, focus on the present.
What happens is he comes back and they start to make bombs. And then she asks him, you know, about the future. You know, is there anybody in the future? Like, do you have a girlfriend or anything, sort of thing? And he's just like, "No. John gave me your picture years ago," which isn't actually years ago. It's years in the future. Very confusing. But it's years ago for him. And he's like, "And I knew from then that, you know, that I was in love with you then. So just, I had no interest in the future of anybody else." A little bit creepy.
Ted, you make it sound so romantic. You really do.
No, it sounds very creepy. Like, here's a picture of my mum. Oh, you know, she's great looking. I'm never going to be with anybody else until I go back to the past to get with your mum. Like, a little bit creepy, dude. But
make you.
Yeah, but John never tells Reese that Reese is his dad. So he knows he needs to send Reese back. So he, you know, you're kind of thinking like he gave him that picture with the whole. It's weird.
There's your catch 22. What you do? I'm sending you back to ride me, man.
Imagine if that was filmed in Finglas or something like that.
Yeah. But also he's like, if I don't do it, then I am not born. So, you know,
everything dwindles.
I real like again. You're like, well, which do I do? Like, actually send them back, or do I just not exist? Tough choice.
Well, he's the leader of the revolution, so.
Yeah, true. But he does, and this is where we see, you know, how John Connors is conceived, shall we say. A one-night stand.
Get up. Great men have been conceived that way. You know?
Yeah, many of people. One-night stand in a dodgy motel that they've been building bombs in. I mean, definitely.
He was certainly building a bomb, all right.
Built a few.
Oh, yeah.
But the next morning, the Terminator does show up. And we have the big chase scene where he's in the big truck.
He loves to be out big trucks, James Cameron does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, they look great in a chase scene, don't they? You know, like you're driving along in this little car and this massive truck is just pelting along behind you. You'd be shitting it all
right. Because you've got no chance of it getting here.
Yeah.
That's what is the... Sorry, I'm going to just break off this for a second. What is the actual chances of seeing a film like this anymore? Ever again?
No. Exactly. The problem is that to create a film like this... You need to be willing to look at here's what could go wrong, and a lot of the stuff has been done. So when you make the film, like they kind of had the twist in here, you know, of like, oh, this happens and then this happens. Whereas now we're also used to that as well. We've seen it, so it's kind of like, oh, this, we're all thinking in our head, oh, this is what's going to happen, which stops you, you know, enjoying the film. Like, it's very hard. Like, you do need to go into a film and kind of turn your brain off in that sense of like, don't think about what could happen.
Yeah.
But actually, it's hard to do that, you know?
The last film I can think of that had an original concept that really had me going was probably Shutter Island.
Yeah, that was a good one, actually.
Yeah. There's been a few films that like have had good concepts. Now, whether they live up to it or not is another thing. I think there has been a few good concepts. Like Saw, probably.
Yeah, Saw was different.
Yeah.
I think Saw had a good concept and it delivered. But yeah, I do get your point. It's very rare to find something that delivers as well as this does now.
I suppose what I'm trying to say is, you know, the way that the world is so woke now.
Yeah.
And just like half of the stuff in 80s films wouldn't fly now at all. Oh, you couldn't even talk about them from a book. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're in trouble for that now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you find you find yourself watching what you say a lot of the time nowadays.
For certain films, this one I think is actually quite okay in that sense. I think it was
you could write ahead of its time. Maybe same for saying.
Yeah, I think you could because it's quite a bit ahead of its time now.
Yeah.
You'd struggle to find anybody to replace Arnie.
Arnie would replace Arnie.
I think you'd have to just have Arnie do Arnie again. Yeah, but we see the big chase scene and. What I love here is that you just see Reese, like, he's just, like, leaning out with his car, just firing bombs over, just throwing them over his shoulder. Yeah, that'll get him. Yeah, this big robot that we've been shooting at all day. Yeah. This bomb will...
That'll
slightly annoy him, won't it? Now, he does eventually... they get out of the car, and she's running away from it on foot, and he hides behind this, like, dumpster and throws one up the tailpipe, which is... That's a great idea. That's an absolutely, like, that's a fantastic scene because you're kind of thinking, like, how are they going to stop him? And, like, that would work, you know?
Throw it up his tailpipe, yeah.
Yeah. But what I love
is that... He already did it up poor, so it's fine.
We see the big explosion and the massive fire where... It looks like they finally beat him.
Everything you're saying now just sounds sexual. Sorry.
I know. That's you guys' fault. I tried to steer away from this, but this wouldn't happen. But you two boys wouldn't have it.
I played the fifth.
No, but we see the massive fire, and then he like we see the metal skeleton collapse in the fire.
Yeah.
Which I think is great because it makes you think like, okay, they finally defeated him. Like he's down. That's him out. And just as it all looks, you know, everything's safe, everyone's safe, we see him raise up again. But this time, it's just a metal robot. Skeleton.
Yeah. Arnie's gone from the film now.
Yeah, Arnie is completely gone. This is probably the one bit where you really notice that it's the 80s. Yeah. When it's like chasing them down the hallway, you're like, God, this looks doesn't look great anymore.
It was the animatronics type thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It had the Jaws kind of air about it, didn't it? With the shark being limited in what it could do.
See, I think Jaws kind of got away with it a little bit more because it was coming kind of up out of the ocean, whereas this had to like run at you.
Yeah.
And I just think the way, like, you can see, you know, it's from the 80s. This is probably the one part where you're like, yeah, this is an 80s film. The rest of it, you'd probably be like, this could be relatively new. All of it looks quite good. This is the only part. And I'd imagine, as I said, there's the audience rating's a little bit lower here. I would imagine that this is where some of that audience rating is. Some people have nitpicked at that and said, it doesn't look great. And you're like, yeah, but it was the 80s, man.
Exactly.
Like, this was the best they had. You know, we didn't have CGI back then. This is the best they had. So, like, you know, fine.
They built that to work.
Yeah, I think it looks fine, but it's just because we're so used to what we can get now.
I suppose what we were used to seeing Arnie... moving like a robot, I suppose you could say.
Yeah.
And then when we got the robot, it just was clunky, not in the sense that it should have been a robot clunky, like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Where's Arnie gone?
But we see the big battle in the the factory. They love ending this these films in a factory, don't they?
Yeah.
I like that Reese. You've seen the Terminator exposed now, so you know there's a crevice in the body of the Terminator, and he's like, you can see how he thinks because he's been growing up in a war. He's like, he notices these things because he sees it, and he's like, that's how I'll kill it.
And
like,
he's trained to fight them, yeah.
He's trained to fight them. So he finds the weak spot and he blows it up. Unfortunately, killing himself in the process. But at the same time, his job was to go back and to make sure that Sarah Connor lived.
He had two jobs to do when he didn't bolt.
Well, he only knows about one job.
No, he had you had one job, man.
Keep the dinosaurs out of the kitchen, man. but no, he... It looks like, again, this is where it's great, because twice in the space of maybe 10 minutes, it looks like the film's over.
Yeah.
And both times it continues where she's sitting there now crying about the fact that he's dead. And then we see the robot just lift its head up again. That and it there, starts crawling at her. It's great.
Yeah.
That there is probably another thing that's probably marked down. Like, she's known him for probably 3 days and she's in love.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
She's infatuated with him.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a rushed timeline, I suppose, where they were like, okay, we need to get this done. But, yeah. And, but you know, the 80s, I think they kind of liked having those love interests in the 80s all the time, didn't they, really?
Every film ever.
Yeah. But we see Terminator, you know, crawling after her. Obviously, he has no bottom half, so all he can do is crawl.
And it doesn't look as bad when it's doing that.
When it's crawling, it looks a lot better. It was the way it tried to move down the corridor that looked bad.
Yeah.
But we see that she can't run either, because a bit of the shrapnel of when Reese blew up the robot caught her in the leg. So she's crawling as well. And again, she's not the military badass that she grows into being. So this injury, you know, she's just a normal person. And like, if you got a piece of shrapnel in your leg, you're probably not getting up and walking it off, you know?
Yeah, think how sore it is when you stand on a piece of glass.
Exactly, yeah. So she crawls through what is the hydraulic press. And eventually that's how she defeats this Terminator, by locking the grate down and pressing the button and crushing his head.
You've been terminated.
You've been terminated. and then... You know, we just see her driving along, and we learn that she's pregnant, and she's talking on the little radio thing.
Yeah.
And this is where we learn that she is going to tell John that Reese is her dad, because she debates it with herself. She's like, I don't know if I should tell you, because will you be able to send him back if you know you're sending your dad back to die?
Well, it has to happen. That's the thing.
Yeah. So she decides she will tell him. Now, we never find out if she does, but presumably she does. And then we see where the picture comes from, and it's that little kid who just takes her picture, and he's like, oh, this is such a beautiful picture, but my dad's gonna beat me if you don't buy it for $5.
And then she tries to haggle with him, doesn't she?
She does haggle. She's like,
what a bitch.
She's like, good racket, I'll give you $4.
Just give him the extra dollar so he can get beaten up. Like,
this kid's gonna get beaten if you don't give him $5. Just give him the extra dollar. Like,
you can tell the dad's sitting in there with the belt ready to go.
I'm presuming the dad is the guy that told her, the guy who like owns the petrol station, because this kid's hardly just hanging around petrol stations taking people's pictures, is he?
I'd say he's his dad.
Because it seems to be like
he definitely is the owner, or he works there, one or the other.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the two. But we see her with the picture and the dog. In the background, the dog that they took from the motel, which a little bit weird, not your dog. Why have you stolen that dog? I know that they kept the dog because dogs can sense Terminators, but I mean, you've stolen somebody's dog. Like, that is not okay.
Dog doesn't give a shit, obviously, because it's getting fed. So,
yeah. But you know, I suppose that leads into what the rest of her life is like. I suppose stealing one dog isn't too big a deal to her anymore, is it? And we see her kind of drive off into the distance.
Desert.
to wrap up this film. As you said, Carl, like there's not many films like this anymore.
No, it's spectacular. What I loved about it as well is, and most of the filming was done at night.
It had to be,
but it gave such a really eerie feeling, and I'm sure you, you know, you and I say it on my on the slab, atmosphere, atmospheric feeling, a gritty vibe, a dread vibe that I just love in films. And it reminds me as well, I don't know, you know, I'd be a little bit older than you boys, you know, and it reminds me of good times when I would have seen that film, you know. I remember staying up like till about 12:30, 1 o'clock or whatever when it would be on.
Just a sneaker.
Yeah.
Well, that's
where Greg, I said Red Nightmare.
That's what happened to me with Nightmare on Elm Street. My parents were like, not watching that, not watching that. It used to come on TG4 about 11:30.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm in. That set it all off.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about this film is like, obviously you would want to watch it like any film from the start. Mm-hmm. But I think even if you jumped in at the halfway point of this film,
you could catch yourself up quickly.
You know what's happening. Like, you can catch what's happening, which is the mark of, to me, a great film. Like, if you can't catch up to a film relatively quickly, now it doesn't mean that films where you need to, like, where you can't catch up are bad either. But I like the idea that, like, if you know, you don't need to know everything about everything to be able to understand what's happening.
And for such a confusing, like, story, potentially confusing to people.
Yeah.
It's great storytelling that you can pick up somewhere in the film and not be lost. It's brilliant, like, when you think about it.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's a real simple story, you know? Robot hunting down someone to kill them, someone trying to help them.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's the entire plotline. Like, if someone told you, you know, you have to explain this film in the simplest terms, that's how you explain it. And it doesn't sound very good.
Yeah.
But it's a credit to the director, the actors, and, you know, the people who shot the film and how they shot it. That really shows that simple concepts are what make films good. Like I said Saw earlier, again, simple concept, you know?
Great concept,
two guys in a room.
Yeah, just anything with a simple concept usually tends to be the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as you're saying, kind of atmosphere, like I make it like I kind of equate that to, do you know when you go to like a concert or something like that? I'm not big into outdoor concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really enjoy them because I'm into like rock and heavy metal music and stuff. And being outdoors, especially in like the sunlight.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Like I went to see like Guns N' Roses at Slane. I went to see Foo Fighters at Slane, and it just kind of doesn't work as well. Especially Slane is definitely too big. It's a great place to go, and like it sounds great and everything, but it's too big. Now I went to see Killers at the RDS, and that's a lot more cramped.
Yeah.
But it works there because you are like you're in this, even though it's bright out, it's like this atmosphere of, you know, everyone's energy just like is so close. And that's why I loved indoor gigs and stuff. Like the Tivoli was brilliant for concerts. Fibber's great for concerts.
Yeah.
Because you're in this small dingy little area listening to what is like rock is kind of like generally quite a like dirty sounding music, you know, loud, heavy. And the atmosphere of the music and what's around you, it just works so well. And it's the exact same in this, you know. It's dark outside. The concept of the film is dark. Yeah. You know, people getting shot, like overkill. And, you know, someone being hunted. All dark characteristics. And having that dark background to it works perfectly.
I think right up until the kind of last scene where you see her in the desert type thing, where it's open, it's huge. Up until that scene, the whole film has felt claustrophobic, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's horribly tense and...
Yeah, absolutely.
It really has that air of Halloween about it. Everything's just cramped in. There's no breathing room. You think, oh, they've got away now, and then all of a sudden he's there.
Yeah.
Like, that's the way I always found this, like, because I would have seen Halloween a couple of times before I'd seen this, I'd say. And it's that whole... Yeah, they're free. They have a chance to get away here, and then all of a sudden, it's just snatched away again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the best. As I said, kind of this is a sci-fi horror. The second one is more of a
action sci-fi.
Okay. But We will have the second one up later on today with, as I said, the other half of the On the Slab, which just released their Jaws one last night. Check that out. It's, I haven't watched it yet because we were recording this as it went on.
I always miss my premieres now.
I will be watching it in the morning because it is one of, as I said, one of my favorite films. And horror, if you're into horror, On the Slab is definitely the place to be going at the moment.
100%. And as well as that, you guys did a Jaws episode as well. So
myself and Ian, yeah.
Yeah, so you'll get a different kind of context on it. Well, not really.
It's a different way of looking at the film, yeah. Both like how we look at films and how you guys kind of like, we kind of go through what happens in the film, whereas you discuss
feelings about it,
and pieces that you love about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a general discussion about a film or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
But that's it for this episode. Obviously, like us on YouTube, follow the Facebooks, the Twitters. They're all, you'll find them all fairly easily. We're at Retrotainment. Carl's at King Rose Court. I don't think On the Slab have anything at the moment, yet. So just follow the DPN for that. Yeah. And you'll find all the other brilliant shows, Upper Tier, King Rose Court, obviously, Dynamo's Dozen, Flaming Puck, The Four Podmen, everything. Did I miss any? Oh, Chelsea Roar.
The Chelsea Roar.
Which I assume we'll see yourself on at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah. As much as,
All said as a chore there.
Carl's an all right guy, even if he is a Chelsea fan, he's
one
all right.
Of the good Chelsea fans.
He's all right,
Is there such a thing?
You're looking at it, pal.
Yeah.
We also support the Raiders.
They're few and far between. But that's it for this week. So good luck